This episode's audio was generated using AI technology.
What if I told you that focusing on everything you completely failed to accomplish today is actually the biological secret to falling asleep 10 minutes faster?
I mean, it sounds totally counterintuitive, right?
It really does. But there's this fascinating study from Baylor University that proves writing down your unfinished tasks right before your head hits the pillow, it actually acts as this neurological off switch for your brain.
Yeah, it completely flips conventional wisdom on its head. I mean, we've been told for years to focus on, gratitude and positive affirmations before bed.
Right, the whole count your blessings thing.
Exactly.
But
the science of how our working memory actually operates tells a completely different story about what really brings us peace.
We are definitely going to unpack the mechanics of that study today because, honestly, it is a game changer. Welcome to another episode of The Everyday Edit.
It's great to be here.
This is the show dedicated to simplifying your daily routines and building an intentional life, but we're doing it without, all that exhausting, toxic pressure of perfectionism.
We have enough pressure as it is.
We really do. And today, we are on a mission to reclaim our evenings. We want to construct a realistic, minimalist evening routine that actually reduces your stress.
Which is so needed right now.
It is. But to do that, we have to start by answering a question that literally every single person listening has asked themselves at some point. Why do our brains feel like absolute mush at 8 p.m.?
Oh, man. You know that feeling. You're on the couch, you finally have the remote, and you are just completely paralyzed by the Netflix menu.
Yes. You scroll for 20 minutes, end up watching nothing, and just stare at the wall.
Right. And the exhaustion you're feeling in that exact moment, it isn't physical. It's cognitive. We really have to look at the prefrontal cortex, which basically acts as the executive command center of your brain.
Okay, so it's the part making all the decisions.
Exactly. Every single day, you make thousands of micro decisions. I mean, what to wear, how to phrase a delicate email, whether to smile at a coworker in the hallway.
It just seems like such tiny, inconsequential choices, though.
Individually, yeah, they are. But the brain, despite being only about 2% of your total body weight, it consumes roughly 20% of your body's energy.
Wow, 20%.
Yeah, decision-making is this incredibly metabolically expensive process. It actively burns through glucose. So by the time the evening rolls around, that executive command center has been running at absolute maximum capacity for 12 to 14 hours.
Which makes sense why we just short circuit. I found the conflicting research on this in our sources really interesting, actually, because for decades, psychologists relied on this concept called ego depletion.
Right. The old gas tank theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was this idea that willpower is literally a finite fuel tank. You use it up all day, the tank hits empty, and you just have zero discipline left by nighttime.
And that was the prevailing theory for a long time, heavily popularized by some big studies back in the late 90s. But modern neuroscience is actually pushing back on that whole empty tank metaphor.
So the tank isn't empty.
Not exactly. The consensus is shifting toward what they call a motivational model.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain isn't strictly out of fuel. Rather, it's running this constant subconscious cost-benefit analysis.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, after thousands of choices, your brain assesses the remaining energy and just decides that conserving those resources is now way more critical than making optimal choices. It actively shifts your motivation from have-to goals to want-to goals.
Okay, so my tired brain isn't like a dead smartphone battery. It's more like a really frugal efficiency manager.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Like the power isn't totally gone, but this manager has looked at the spreadsheet, decided it is way too expensive to keep paying overtime for these minor choices, and just flips the breaker.
That analogy hits a nail right on the head. The manager hasn't run out of money. They're just, refusing to authorize the spend.
Sorry, budget's closed for the day.
Exactly. And when that breaker flips, the behavioral symptoms are immediate. You become irritable. You experience this profound apathy. You basically default to the absolute path of least resistance.
Which totally explains cereal for dinner.
Exactly.
But what really stood out in the source material is that this cognitive drain, it does not hit everyone equally. The data shows this fatigue disproportionately impacts women and caregivers due to something called the invisible load.
Yes. The invisible load. This is huge. It's the relentless, behind-the-scenes cognitive labor required to just manage a household or care for other people.
Like all the background apps running on a computer.
Exactly. It's anticipating needs before they even arise. It's remembering that, oh, the kids need gym shoes on Tuesday, or tracking when the milk is going to run out, or even just managing the emotional climate of the home.
Right, checking the temperature of everyone's mood. It's all these micro decisions made on behalf of other people.
And if you are carrying that invisible load, your efficiency manager is processing double the data all day long.
So no wonder the breaker flips so much earlier in the evening for so many of us.
Exactly. And this brings us to, really, the most critical trap of the modern evening. Because that efficiency manager has shut down the complex decision-making centers, we naturally gravitate to whatever requires zero cognitive effort.
And for most of us, let's be honest, that is the smartphone.
Yep. The infinite scroll, it acts as this digital pacifier.
But the research points out this massive irony here. We think scrolling is resting, like we are zoning out, but it's actually compounding the exhaustion.
Oh, 100%. Because every single time you switch between apps, every little notification banner you read,
sure,
every short form video you have to decide to either skip or watch, those are all disguised micro decisions.
So you're quietly draining the exact same cognitive reserve you've been depleting all day?
You are. Stepping away from the screen isn't just some tired lecture about, you know, saving your eyesight or being present. It is deeply rooted in how we actually experience restoration.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, psychologists differentiate between two main types of well-being, hedonic and eudaimonic. Hedonic well-being is all about momentary pleasure and avoiding pain. It's that quick dopamine hit you get from a funny video on your feed.
Right, it feels good for about 3 seconds.
Exactly. But eudaimonic well-being, which actually comes from Aristotelian philosophy, is much deeper. It's about living authentically, finding alignment, and experiencing truly meaningful rest.
Meaningful rest. I love that phrasing.
It's vital.
Yeah.
To access that eudaimonic state, your brain requires spaciousness. It needs these moments of understimulation to just process the day and consolidate memories.
And I'm guessing you can't get that from a screen.
You fundamentally cannot access that restorative state when you are bombarding your visual cortex with a new piece of highly engineered stimuli every 3 seconds.
I hear that, and I agree, but I want to push back a little on the terminology we often use to solve this, because the internet loves the phrase digital detox. For a busy parent or a professional who finally gets 30 minutes of quiet at 9:00 p.m., trying to execute a perfect detox feels like just another standard to fail at.
It really does.
It turns rest into a performance. If you check your email once, you feel like you ruined the whole night and you failed your detox.
I am so glad you brought that up. The pursuit of purity in our habits is just a fast track to failure.
Mm-hmm.
We do not need a total detox. We just need environmental boundaries that don't rely on willpower.
Because, as we establish, the efficiency manager has already cut off your willpower budget for the day.
Exactly. No budget left.
So one of the most brilliant, low-friction strategies I saw in our sources is using a 20-minute beeswax candle.
It is environmental design at its absolute finest.
It really is. So these are small, specialized little candles designed to burn out naturally in about 20 minutes.
That's right. They just extinguish on their own.
Yeah. You light it, you leave your phone on the charger in another room, and you use that time for an analog activity. Maybe you read a physical book, maybe you stretch, maybe you just stare at the ceiling.
Staring at the ceiling is highly underrated.
It really is. But what I love about this is the mechanism. It removes the decision of, when do I stop? You don't have to look at a clock, and you certainly don't want to set an alarm on your phone for 20 minutes.
Because the moment you touch the phone to turn off the alarm, you'll see a text notification get sucked right back in.
Exactly. You just surrender to the candle. When the flame goes out, the activity is over. It's so simple.
And it creates a much-needed buffer zone. We biologically need to separate from screens about 60 to 90 minutes before sleep.
Because of the blue light, right?
Yes. Blue light actively inhibits the pineal gland's production of melatonin, which is the hormone that signals to your body it's time to sleep. The candle bridges that gap beautifully and naturally.
Okay, so we've bypassed the phone trap. But before we actually get to bed, we still have to physically get ready. We walk into the bathroom, and suddenly we're faced with another massive decision matrix.
The skincare routine.
The dreaded skincare routine. Social media has completely convinced us that we need, like, a pre-cleanse oil, an exfoliating wash, a balancing toner, a hydrating essence, 3 distinct serums, a sheet mask, and a night cream.
It's exhausting just listening to that list. Staring at a counter cluttered with 15 different bottles is an immediate trigger for the exact decision fatigue we are trying to escape.
Which is why I was thrilled to see the dermatology notes in our sources pushing this concept called skinimalism.
Such a great term.
Right. It's the total rejection of the 13-step routine in favor of a highly functional, maybe two or three-step process. I kind of view it like a capsule wardrobe for your face.
Oh, that's a perfect way to look at it.
Yeah, because a capsule wardrobe works because every piece matches, right? It eliminates the stress of getting dressed. Skinimalism does the exact same thing for your evening maintenance.
And there are actually clinical dermatologists who point out that unless you are treating a severe, specific skin condition under direct medical supervision, mixing 10 different over-the-counter products is actually counterproductive.
Wait, really? Like it makes your skin worse?
Often, yes.
Yeah.
Your skin has a natural protective layer called the acid mantle. When you layer on multiple active ingredients, say an alpha-hydroxy acid followed by a strong retinol, you drastically increase the risk of chemical clashes.
Ouch. That sounds irritating.
It is. You can easily degrade the active ingredients and actually destroy that epidermal barrier, which just leads to inflammation and breakouts.
So doing less isn't just saving you time and a ton of money, it's biologically safer for your skin.
Much safer.
The standard recommendation here is incredibly simple, guys. A gentle cleanser to remove daily pollutants and a multifunctional moisturizer. That's it. If you want anti-aging benefits, just use a moisturizer formulated with a retinoid so you aren't adding a separate serum step.
But the critical mechanism for success here, the one thing you have to remember, is cellular turnover.
Oh, right.
The skin is a living organ, and its natural turnover cycle is roughly 28 days. The sources are very clear on this. You cannot try a minimalist routine for 4 days, decide you don't look like a glowing supermodel, and rush out to buy a new trending serum.
Right, you have to stick with it.
Consistency is the actual active ingredient.
You just have to, as we'll talk about later, satisfice. Wash your face, moisturize, and walk away. Don't overthink it.
Walk away from the mirror.
Okay, so the physical routine is streamlined. The face is clean, the candle has burned out, the room is dark, you slide under the covers, you close your eyes, and suddenly your brain turns on like a stadium floodlight.
Oh, the worst feeling in the world.
You remember an email you forgot to send, you worry about a deadline for next week, and you recall a deeply embarrassing thing you said at a holiday party like 5 years ago.
We have all been hostage to that exact moment.
Yeah.
To understand why the brain does this to us, we actually have to look back to the 1920s to a psychologist named Blumazy Garnick.
Okay, I love a good history tie-in.
So she was observing waiters in a really busy Vienna cafe, and she noticed something weird. The waiters could remember these incredibly complex, unpaid orders with perfect clarity.
Like who had the schnitzel, who had the coffee, all of it.
Exactly. But the absolute moment the bill was paid and the transaction was officially closed, the waiters completely forgot the details of the order.
It just vanished from their brains.
Thus, the Zeigarnik effect was born. It is our psychological tendency to remember uncompleted or interrupted tasks far, far better than completed ones.
Because the brain hates an open loop.
Exactly. As long as a task is perceived as open or unresolved, your working memory holds onto it. It is constantly nudging your conscious mind so you don't forget it.
Which is an evolutionary survival mechanism, I assume.
It is, but it is absolutely disastrous for trying to initiate sleep in the modern world.
Which brings us right back to that Baylor University study I mentioned at the very beginning of the show. Researchers found that if people spent just 5 minutes writing down a very specific to-do list of unfinished tasks, literally the things they fail to do today and need to do tomorrow, they fell asleep significantly faster than those who journaled about their accomplishments.
It seems so backwards. We always associate to-do lists with stress.
Right. Doesn't writing down all your problems right before bed just spike your anxiety?
You'd think so. But the anxiety keeping you awake isn't generated by the tasks themselves. The anxiety is generated by your brain's fear that it will lose track of those open tabs.
Oh, wow. So it's the fear of forgetting, not the actual chore.
Precisely.
It's basically the cognitive equivalent of saving a massive document and finally closing the application on your desktop. The computer's RAM is instantly freed up.
That's a great way to put it. By physically writing it down on paper, you are transferring the burden of remembering. You take it from your neurological working memory and put it onto a physical object.
You are providing the closure the Zeigarnik effect demands.
Exactly. And the sources outline a really fantastic, quick, 5-minute evening journal system to achieve this. It uses 5 specific prompts.
Yes, I actually tried the system this week, and the structure is really what makes it work. You aren't just like free writing and spiraling into your thoughts.
Right, structure is key here.
You just jot down tomorrow's primary goal, which acts as the offload for the brain. Then you write down today's achievements, which sort of counters our natural negativity bias.
You gotta have a little positivity in there.
Definitely. Then you write down one thing to let go of, a single happy thought. And finally, and I found this really interesting, you give the day a positivity score from 1 to 10.
That scoring element is actually particularly clever from a psychological standpoint.
Really? Why is that?
Giving the day a numerical score forces a strict boundary. It basically gamifies closure. You are essentially drawing a thick black line at the bottom of a ledger. The day has been audited, it's scored, and it's filed away.
The efficiency manager can finally go home.
They get to clock out.
So the mind is clear, the tabs are closed. The final frontier of the evening routine is the actual physical bedroom. We really need the environment to do the heavy lifting of putting us to sleep, so we don't have to try.
And this is where sensory design comes into play.
Sensory design?
Yeah, it's the practice of optimizing your environment to signal safety to your nervous system. You want to shift from that sympathetic fight or flight state into a parasympathetic rest and digest state.
Okay, let's break that down by senses. Let's look at temperature first. The science dictates keeping the room cool, ideally around 65 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pretty chilly.
It is. Most people know they like a cool room. But the biological necessity of it is fascinating. When you fall asleep, your core body temperature naturally drops by a couple of degrees.
Oh, so the room needs to match the body.
Right. This temperature drop is a primary biological trigger for sleep onset. If your room is too warm or your blankets trap way too much heat, your body struggles to lower its core temperature, and that actively delays the release of sleep hormones.
That perfectly explains why breathable natural fabrics like cotton or linen are so highly recommended in the sources. You don't want synthetic fabrics trapping all that heat.
Exactly.
What about auditory design? I mean, obviously, a quiet room is better, but the research goes much deeper into how sound impacts something called sleep architecture.
Yes, sleep architecture. This refers to the structural organization of your sleep cycles. So moving from light sleep into deep slow wave sleep, and then into REM sleep.
And deep sleep is where the magic happens, right?
Deep sleep is where physical restoration occurs. It's crucial. But if a floorboard creaks or a car drives by outside, the noise might not be loud enough to wake you up completely.
But it still affects you.
Yes. It is loud enough to pull your brain out of that restorative deep slow wave sleep and bump you right back into light sleep.
That is wild. So you could sleep for 8 full hours, but wake up feeling totally exhausted because your sleep architecture was constantly being fractured by background noise that you don't even remember hearing.
Exactly the issue, which is why the sources recommend using physical objects like thick bookshelves to absorb acoustic reflections in the room and using a continuous white noise machine.
How does white noise actually help, though? Doesn't it just add more sound?
It raises the auditory baseline of the room. So it masks those sudden spikes in sound, like the floorboard creaking. Because the baseline is higher, the spike doesn't register as a threat to your brain, so your sleep architecture remains intact.
Okay, that makes so much sense. There is also a fascinating note in the research regarding who actually gets the most out of their sleep architecture. The data shows that women often require longer sleep durations, sometimes up to 10 hours.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
But it's not because their biological sleep architecture is inherently different or, you know, weaker.
No, it circles right back to the invisible load we discussed earlier.
The background apps.
Exactly. Because women generally perform more varied and complex cognitive and physical labor throughout the day, their neurological systems simply require a longer period of slow wave sleep to repair all that cellular damage.
They need more time to clear out the metabolic waste produced in the brain.
Precisely. Reframing sleep as a biological recovery tool rather than a luxury is just essential.
Absolutely. It's a biological need. And to aid that recovery, we can look at one more sense, the sense of taste. I always thought a complex stack of magnesium pills and all these expensive herbal supplements was required for optimal sleep.
Oh, the supplement industry is booming with sleep aids.
Right. But the sources highlight a surprisingly simple alternative, tart cherry juice.
It's a wonderful example of functional nutrition. Tart cherries naturally contain high levels of tryptophan, which is an amino acid, as well as specific enzymes that keep that tryptophan in the bloodstream longer.
So it's not just knocking you out with a chemical.
Right. The body uses that prolonged exposure to synthesize its own melatonin. It naturally accelerates sleep onset without that heavy grogginess you often get from synthetic melatonin pills.
And it's just a small glass of cherry juice. No mixing weird powders, no organizing little plastic pill boxes. It fits perfectly into that minimalist ethos we are trying to build.
It really does.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we pull all of these threads together, the cognitive fatigue, the digital boundaries, the skinimalism, the brain dump, and the sensory environment there is an overarching philosophy here.
I feel like it all comes down to cutting ourselves some slack.
Yes. It's a concept from decision science called satisficing.
Right. Coined by the economist Herbert Simon, it's a portmanteau, right, of satisfying and sufficing.
Yes, exactly. Satisficing is a decision-making strategy that aims for a satisfactory or adequate result, rather than searching endlessly for the optimal, perfect solution.
So, good enough.
Good enough. When we apply this to our evenings, we are actively rejecting the pressure to have a perfect Instagram-worthy routine.
Because you really don't have to execute every single thing we talked about today. You don't need a perfectly curated capsule wardrobe for your face, and a perfectly timed aesthetic beeswax candle, and a perfectly scored journal entry all in one single night.
If you try to optimize your evening routine to that extreme, you will just trigger the exact decision fatigue you are trying to cure.
You'll exhaust yourself trying to relax.
Exactly. The goal is to pick just one low-friction habit. Wash your face with water. Write down 3 open tabs on a sticky note. Drink a little sip of cherry juice.
What if applying a satisficing mindset, like simply accepting that your routine is good enough tonight, is actually the ultimate secret to restorative sleep?
It very well might be.
By removing the pressure to be perfect, you eliminate the performance anxiety that keeps your working memory on high alert.
It is the ultimate permission slip to just let the day end.
I absolutely love that. So the next time you find yourself at 8 p.m., absolutely drained, sinking into the couch and staring blankly at a black television screen, I want you to remember that your brain isn't broken.
Not at all.
Your efficiency manager is just protecting your energy. You don't need a flawless routine. You just need to grab a pen, write down what you completely failed to do, and let good enough carry you to sleep.